Welcome to Illinois Family Spotlight, a conversation about issues of the day from a biblical perspective, as well as highlights from interviews, conferences, and events. Here's Monty Larrick.
Thanks for making this special edition of Illinois Family Spotlight part of your day. I'm joined by businessman James Martyr, the 14th District Republican candidate for Congress. What kind of business are you involved in, Jim?
So I'm a software consultant. Been doing that IT, information technology work, for about 35 years, 22 as my own business. So I get the great fortune and opportunity to see all kinds of manufacturing companies around Illinois, around the state, around the United States, and around the world. And I get to see how things are made and done, put together, and all that fun stuff.
Difficult to be in business in this economy?
With a lot of the clients, the companies that I work for, I get to see when the economy's bad, what's happened to companies. They're laying off, they're cutting back budgets, they're not doing as much. You get to see that firsthand, especially when you're looking at an economy where everything's kind of uncertain.
Do they want change, these business people?
They want the government out of their way. Most of them don't mind the good government stuff. And by that, I mean things like OSHA, occupational health and safety, good manufacturing practices, which is actually part and parcel to what I do as a software consultant. But they don't want over-regulation, burdensome regulation that doesn't provide anyone any value. It just provides a cost, an extra cost to the consumer. So.
You've been a candidate for Congress before. You've had to take a couple months off your job to run for Congress again. Why do that?
I found out that the party that I believe in, the Republican Party, whose primary concern is life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, isn't all that, let's say, all that under the covers, right? And you find there's good and bad people in all the politics. And when I found out that there were people inside the party that I liked and I believe in, the values, faith, family, and freedom that we support, that you find there's a lot of people that aren't really in it for that. They're just in it for themselves. It's hard to say, I'm going to walk away and just let them do that. I have an opportunity to change things. I'm going to take that opportunity when it arises. And that's pretty much what happened. My kids were grown up, so the opportunity presented itself. I was involved in my church, education commission. I was involved in scouts, 15 years of scout leader. So it's interesting how parties have, let's say, changed, if you will.
Evolved.
Right. Yeah. Well, the Democrat Party definitely evolved.
Yeah, right.
Where Democrats, like my grandfathers, would not recognize it. And I can guarantee you right now, they would not support what's going on in the Democrat Party of today.
You're running against the incumbent, Lauren Underwood. You think you can beat her?
I think so. When we looked at this run, so it's not my first rodeo, as you mentioned, and I've also served as the Republican Party chair for three cycles, worked on a lot of elections, got a lot of other people elected. And looking at this race, this district, it is a Democrat-drawn district for Lauren Underwood. They did that in the 2022 remap that's part of a constitutional process, but they drew them, you know, the Democrats are in control in Illinois, they drew it for her, but they had to protect other people too, so they didn't give her as good as a district I'm sure she wanted, right? Before the remap, Jim Oberreis came within 1.5%. I think he actually won that year. I think they, let's say, might have manufactured some votes.
Really?
You know, possibly. No direct proof, but I actually saw a report that his team put together. There were a lot of really questionable things there. 2022, off-year, non-presidential, not good for the Republicans in Illinois by any means.
No red wave here.
No red wave. I mean, we did win Congress that year nationwide, but in Illinois, a disaster for the Republicans, primarily because Republican voters didn't turn out. So, but Lauren Underwood only wins by 54% of the vote, which is, if you can do math well, that's a 4% flip. If you can flip 4% of the votes, that's a win. I think with the issues that we have, inflation out of control, invasion at the southern border, the border's not secure, craziness going on all over the country with that, anti-Semitism on the rise around the country, craziness going on college campuses, people are tired of it. I mean, they're afraid, and they're tired of it, and they don't want their taxpayer dollars going to fund all this. And I think those issues make this a very winnable district, with kind of the underlying that it's a decent, close district anyway. It's not overwhelmingly Democrat.
But do you think the voters in the district have really been educated enough where they know about these issues? Because if they're watching mainstream media, they're not hearing the whole story.
Right. Absolutely, they're not hearing the whole story. But I can tell you this, and these are more anecdotal stories. So I was talking with a couple young guys that were union guys at the Sandwich Fair this year, and they came into the booth, and they were all excited to talk to us. Okay, hey, there's people here. Oh, there's a guy running for Congress here. I live in his district. He says, I always voted Democrat. Up until now, I'm voting for Trump, and I'm voting for you. You guys got to vote with us. You got to work with us. And I'm like, we have issues we actually agree with you on, right? When we have free trade but not fair trade, we might need to put tariffs on countries like China, right? So I agree with President Trump on that. So we've got some good indicators. I've met people throughout the district that literally told me they voted for Lauren Underwood in the past, they're voting for me in this election. We know that there's at least some trend with some voters to that direction. We are telling our story and our message directly to the voters. So I have a mailer here with me that I brought. We sent that out to over 250,000 voters in the district.
I went on your website. You say you want to cut spending. Where in particular?
Everywhere. Everywhere.
Including our military.
Exactly. Look, by the way, in my career as a software consultant, I've actually worked for two different defense contractors. So, you know, I kind of see how we're spending our money, and I understand the process of how they're spending it. But there's so much spending, even in our military, that is wasteful spending. We know that. But look, there's waste, fraud, and abuse in everything in the government. There's also things in Washington we don't need. I'll target one that Ms. Underwood is out there saying, we got to stop Jim Martyr. He's dangerous. She's called me dangerous, by the way. I think I'm dangerous to her career in Washington, by the way, so I kind of agree with her on that. But the Department of Education is not a constitutional function. It's not in one of the enumerated powers in the Constitution. And if there's anything in that department that we actually do that is useful, we can either let the states do it or the local governments do it, or we can put it under another department and get rid of the whole thing.
Jim, they've been talking about doing away with the Department of Education for years, since Ronald Reagan.
Right?
Can that really happen?
Look, it can. It's rare for the government to cut things. But if you remember when President Trump was elected, he promised he would cut regulation. So as the head of the executive branch, he did. He promised to cut two for every one new regulation that was created. And I recall the early numbers that the Trump administration was talking about, and they were talking about they were actually achieving cutting 20 regulations for every new one that was put out there. Obviously, the Biden administration undid all that, so there's a problem when you only do those things through the executive branch. It is high time for Congress to step up to do this. Obviously, one member of Congress can't do it alone, but you will now have another voice for doing exactly that. Increase the House Freedom Caucus, who is the one caucus in Congress that actually stands for doing things like that, which is kind of where I'm at. I will be relentless in pursuing cutting the size and the scope of the federal government. That will be my number one mission there. We have a congressman from Illinois on the Ways and Means Committee. His name is Darren LaHood.
Right.
You know, I know Darren LaHood. He's been friendly to me. He's endorsed me in this race. So is Congressman Mike Bost from the 15th District and Congresswoman Mary Miller, who is a House Freedom Caucus member. So I will be pushing them harder than any of their past colleagues have to make sure we do this. So part of it is working with our team and pushing to our team that, hey, you guys promised this. You know the motto of the House Freedom Caucus? Do what you said when you were running for Congress, right? Do what you said and go after cutting the size scope of the federal government, balancing the budget.
So you'd be part of that Freedom Caucus.
I would, yeah.
Well, let's say that you get this big, giant omnibus spending bill, and there's some good stuff in there, military spending, but there's some bad stuff in there,
yeah,
too.
Like funding Planned Parenthood.
Like funding Planned Parenthood.
I would be an absolute no vote on that. So there are certain issues that I've campaigned on that I will hold and stick 100% to my promises, which are, if it's a bad bill, I don't care if it's got good stuff in it. If it's a bad bill, I vote no on it. People are like, well, if you do that, then they're going to come after you. Well, look, they, let's say the Republican Party, more the establishment Republican Party, hasn't helped me to get here. So I am not beholden to them or anybody else. I'm beholden to you, the voters in the 14th district, the people who are going to put me in Congress, not anybody else that, you know, wants to control how I vote, because I made certain promises. I'm here to keep them. Like, I see very good members of Congress. We do have some of them, the House Freedom Caucus members, like Congresswoman Mary Miller of Illinois.
On your website, you say you want to grow opportunity. How do you do that in the 14th district? What would you like to see happen in your district in particular?
Here's how you grow opportunity. You stop wasteful spending and you stop the inflationary problems. You also put American energy first back on the docket, right? So the Green New Deal folks, the climate globalist folks, Lauren Underwood, by the way, one of them, voted for all of this nonsense. The $2 trillion, remember the Inflation Reduction Act? So I studied economics at Purdue University. And my professor would have flunked me if I would have told him that $2 trillion spent by me as a vote in Congress was going to reduce inflation, right? That bill, you know what it had in it? It had about $2 trillion of green new energy stuff in it, and they called it the Inflation Reduction Act. Stop it, okay? The government has to stop trying to pick winners and losers from Washington. And I would love to see it happen at the state level too, right? We have plenty of that. I even see it in local level. But we need to stop it. How do you grow opportunity? You open up the free market. You free the market back up. Get the government out of things they don't belong in, like our health care. Congresswoman Underwood, before she was Congresswoman, was one of those 20,000 people they put between you and your doctor to make your health care more expensive for most of the people, right? And she's claiming that's not true, but it is true. I mean, I've asked everybody I know. Nobody's saving any money, and yet they're talking about that. Opportunity starts by getting the government out of things you're not supposed to do, reducing inflation by doing that, and putting American energy back on top, like getting ANWR back online, Keystone XL pipeline. How about building a new nuclear plant? We haven't allowed one to be built since the 1970s. It's kind of crazy, right? All of this matters. They're shuttering coal plants in Illinois. Right. I have one right by my dad's house. It's dark. It's like it used to produce the most energy and probably in of all the Illinois plants, and they shut it down.
Well, your air cleaner because that's shut down?
Well, it's like, first of all, Republicans are not for dirty air, dirty water. We're for cleaner. I work for a lot of companies, and I can tell you this, the scientists, the employees, I was one of them, work for companies that have done way more to improve the environment in terms of clean air, clean water, recycling, taking care of things than any government program ever did.
Well, what do you say to those folks who would say, wait a second, you want to cut regulations for these big oil companies and give them a free hand to do whatever they want to do and to make enormous profits?
I would say to them, every one of those companies, because I've worked at petrochemical companies, I've worked at all kinds of manufacturing companies. And you know what? They employ real people. This is where freedom begins. It's like the free market is the engine. And look at what happened when we freed our people up to do this. We became basically the industrial leader in the world. And now we're kind of wavering from that, because what did we do? We started over-regulating things. And again, we're not against regulation that makes sense for things like we can't have everyone dumping into water supplies. We've learned that. We know it. We've solved that problem. You can't do it, right? Same with air. We've got to have the best technology to keep the air clean. But we want smart government, and we don't want government dictating and telling us, oh, you can only buy a certain kind of light bulb. Remember that one?
And Troy, they want to tell us what kind of cars we
right.
want to drive.
And they want to tell you what kind of cars you want to drive. So on the one hand, they say you got to drive an electric car. On the other hand, they're mining very dangerous minerals out of the earth to produce batteries. And what do you do with that? I mean, is that really clean energy? Is there a better way to do it? If you love your electric car, that's great. I just don't want to pay for it for you. Go ahead and buy one, right?
Right.
And buy it at the free market price without the government taking money from us and making it a very heavily subsidized market. Even the automakers don't want to make these cars. They're looking for ways to how the heck do they get out of this but still meet the government regulation. So this is the kind of regulation we're talking about needs to go away, where the government's trying to tell you and dictate exactly how to do things.
Speaking with Jim Martyr, he is the Republican candidate for Congress in the 14th District. He would like to oust Lauren Underwood, the incumbent Democrat, woke Democrat. Jim has the full endorsement of Illinois Family Action. You mentioned that you'd like to see the Affordable Care Act go away. Do we replace it with something else or let the free market handle health care?
So in the formerly free market before the Affordable Care Act, when I first started my software company, 2002, I actually had to go out because I'm going to leave an employer. So I had very good health care from my prior employers, okay? And I had to leave that environment, that safety net, to start my own business. So the first thing I did before I ended my employer job, I went to some insurance agents, called them up, brought them into my house. They came out like, what do we got here? How do we do this? And I found out right away that I could actually buy my own health care at very reasonable rates, by the way. I was surprised at this. I could buy my own health care, and now here's the freeing part of that. In the free market, private enterprise, I can buy a health policy that was as good as most of the policies I had under my employers, and guess what? Nobody could take it away from me. It was a very, let's say, freeing moment for me when I realized once I had that policy, I'm not tied to an employer or a specific job, and I do contract work. So I can work for anybody that I want to, and I don't have to worry about them getting rid of me and losing my health care because guess what? I had my own policy. And guess what happened? When they passed that law, my health care immediately went up, and they didn't remember that it took them 2 years to implement. The very first year after they passed law, my health insurance jumped up by 10 to 20%. And every year after that, 10 to 20%, to start compounding that, we ended up paying more than 300%. Our kids aged out, so there was only two of us. Both of our health care plans were twice the cost. My wife and I were twice the cost of our home mortgage, and it was unaffordable. Finally, I had to break down and go to the Affordable Care plan, and guess what? You know how they made it affordable? They took my deductible from $1,000 to $9,000.
Oh, my.
My wife is also $9,000. Either one of us, these are two separate things. So we were able to save about half of the premiums. So went from somewhere around $28,000, $30,000 back down to about $15,000 for two of us. For most people, that's still not affordable. I can only do it because I have a good business, you know, as a software consultant. If we have to use that deductible one time in the next, not just in this year, what we're paying that rate, because we have to pay that rate every year. By the way, it's going up this year, even though we got the more affordable plan that Lauren talks about. It's going up again this year, and we just got it. So it's always been going up. There was only one year where it paused, and that was the year that President Trump fixed it and took out the mandate, and Congress took out the mandate. Remember when they did that? That actually put a little bit of free market back into the healthcare plan. It's a disaster. You have 20,000 people in Washington we don't need in the middle of the healthcare mire, and they have requirements and regulations to feed data to this big behemoth in Washington so they can be between you and your doctor and tell you when you need to have a vaccine or a mask, right?
Right.
Is there government regulation going to be in healthcare? Absolutely. Pre-existing conditions, we have to protect.
Well, you talk about mandates in healthcare. Here in Illinois, there's mandated coverage for abortions.
Right.
You oppose that?
I oppose that. There should not be any funding of abortion through the government because that's our money. It shouldn't happen that way.
What about in vitro fertilization? Something that President Trump, who you support, is in favor of.
Look, number one is, again, it's not a required type thing, just like gender surgeries aren't either, right? And for kids, that's child abuse, by the way. I'm totally against it. Anyone that's under 18 should never have that. But those things should not be covered by Washington and our tax dollars, or state tax dollars for that matter. I'm totally against it because we need to protect life, we need to defend life, and we need to do it whenever we can. And the government needs to stay out of forcing us to pay for other people's pro-abortion inclinations.
Well, how are women responding to your pro-life views in the 14th District?
It's interesting because it's Lauren Underwood's number one issue, apparently. That's what she's running on, is she's radical pro-abortion. She wants to codify Roe versus Wade into federal law. And Congress has never voted on a law to force abortion to be the law of the land, mind you. There is a bill currently introduced. I don't think it's ever been voted on. This is how radical she is. She wants a partial birth abortion all the way up to birth. She wants that.
She goes beyond Roe.
Right, right. This is how radical she is. So I'm like, in Washington, because Roe versus Wade overturned, I'm a realist. I understand that my party and the other party is not going to pass the bill that, you know, I think we should have someday, but nobody's going to do it, right?
Right.
So here's what I told her. I said, Lauren, I'm pro-choice. I'm pro-choice for having an ultrasound must be offered at that Planned Parenthood clinic before a woman has an abortion. I'm pro-choice for a three-day waiting period on Planned Parenthood so that if someone's in there, you know, and you know where I got that from, the three-day waiting period that they make me with an already gun odor to buy a gun.
Right.
So a three-day waiting period, you're making a monumentally horrific decision, in my opinion. You ought to make them do that. And the third thing I'm pro-choice for is that they have to offer resources from a pro-life organization that can talk to the woman or the patient that about alternatives to having an abortion and ways that they can be supported through their unplanned pregnancy and supported beyond that. You know, they've already done the reverse type laws where pro-life groups are forced to recommend abortions at clinics and those kind of things,
right,
in California and stuff. So here I am flipping the script. I'm pro-choice for those three issues. Lauren, let's get those. Can you agree on that? She went silent on that stuff. She's not talking about it. She's not going to do that. She's not really pro-choice. She's rabidly pro-abortion. I want to stand with my faith, with God. When you understand God's will on this, you understand you can't be pro-abortion. It just can't happen. So I would like to be out here as the person who can actually talk to younger people, especially, about this issue and hopefully change the hearts and minds out there as their next congressman.
Well,
right?
Let's say you're elected to Congress. Would you support any kind of legislation that would help women make a decision for life?
Yes.
For instance, tax credits for having a baby.
Yeah. Whenever there's a way to make things more pro-life, I'm going to be supporting it. Okay. So that just be to crystal clear. If there's a way to make something more pro-life, I'm going to be for that. But like what I just said, three things, and I use their language, I'm pro-choice for these three things: ultrasound, three-day waiting period, pro-life counseling. If you're going in for an abortion, it's a monumental life-altering decision, life-ending decision. You ought to take some time to think about it and hear from both sides. That would probably have a great impact on the number of abortions if we had simple, let's say, common sense pro-choice laws. Using their terms on those three issues, we could start to change the narrative. And look, they're not pro-choice, because Lauren Underwood's not for those three things I just mentioned, right?
No.
They're not.
James Martyr is a candidate for the 14th District congressional seat, opposed by incumbent Lauren Underwood, who's very pro-abortion and pro-illegal migration.
Yes, she is.
Yeah. President Trump says if he's reelected, he's going to have mass deportations. Is that really feasible? Is that something you want to see?
Yes.
Okay.
So let me comment here. So six words: stop the invasion, secure the border. And that necessarily means a lot of things. But the first thing is we have to send a message to the rest of the world, to the NGOs, non-governmental organizations, that are being funded with our taxpayer dollars and in some cases our charitable contributions, with charities that are actually helping to fund this disaster. It's a humanitarian disaster.
There are those who think that President Biden and Vice President Harris should be held legally responsible for their actions on the border. What do you think?
I think that what's going on and has been going on is treasonous, right?
Okay.
I think it's treasonous. The issue to me is new administration gets in, President Trump's in there, I'm in Congress, mass deportation. Look, they got here, right? They got here funded with our dollars. You don't think we can turn around and last in, first out. We need to have a priority here. What's your priority going to be? It's going to be the worst and worst of criminals, unless we should actually be locking them up, and the worst offenders and those that came in through this very egregious mass invasion that was forced upon the American people by the Biden-Harris administration with the support of Congresswoman Underwood in Congress, right? So we need to do that. And if you don't think that that won't work, it worked the other way. And anyone that's allowing this to happen, the blood's on the people that are allowing the sanctuary states, policies against our immigration policy. We have to stop it. And how do you stop that? The humanitarian way is to send a message. Deport those who came in the last wave, and we'll keep going. We don't have to stop, but LIFO, last in, first out, deport, send a message. It'll stop overnight. And by the way, as President Trump has said this, if you lay down the law, this is what's going to happen. Some people will actually self-deport because they don't want the consequences if they don't, right? So you make it so they have an incentive to self-deport. It's happened before. It's worked before. We can do it again, and it'll work, and it will stop the madness and it'll stop the humanitarian crisis.
Has illegal migration had a big impact in the 14th Congressional District?
Yeah, so very interestingly, in Joliet Township, I believe it was last December, J.B. Pritzker wanted to drop a big $10,000 or $20,000 grant to house the undocumented migrants in Joliet. 300 to 400 people showed up to Joliet Township. Now, anyone who knows anything about township government, you can go to a township meeting. I've been to some. I was the only one there. Nobody shows up for these things, right?
Yeah.
When 300 to 400 people show up, you know what that township board did? And it's not a Republican board. They said, no, JB, we can't. We're not doing this. Because these people understand the impact on their policing. They understand the impact on their schools. They understand the impact on their food pantries. And they understand the impact and the potential rise in crime on their community. They said no. So JB, our governor, JB Pritzker, waltzed the same idea over to Joliet City Council. Guess what they did? They said no, too. Look, it's important we take care of the unfortunate, the poor, but we also have to do it in a responsible way, right?
I'm just really concerned, as a person who's 68 years old, about how this illegal migration will impact my Social Security and my Medicare. Are you hearing from voters in your district that they're worried too?
Yes, yes. And Miss Underwood, I also call her Miss Information, wants to expand Social Security and Medicare
to cover illegal migrants.
Well, that would be the question of the day, right? And of course, she's outwardly said she wants to provide for these folks. So one could take one statement and the other statement, put two and two together, you get four. She's for expanding it. Expanding it, I think they use that term because they think people might think that means you're going to get more money if you paid into it, right? That's not what they're talking about.
When eyeglass care,
right,
dental care,
right,
that sort of thing.
Right. When they say expand it, they mean give more benefits to more people who didn't pay into it, whether they're legal or illegal migrants, right? So I'm for not doing that, specifically with Social Security. I'm for modernizing it, protecting it. And I actually agree with Al Gore on one thing. He said we should put it in a lockbox in 2000. Remember when he ran for president?
Yeah.
And that's actually the right idea. It was the original promise that never materialized with Social Security, was it was going to be in a lockbox, so to speak, in a separate fund where that was, you know, where you could actually invest it, get a return on investment, those kind of things.
Jim, on your website, you mentioned that we have to stop medical tyranny. Of course, we saw that during COVID.
Yes, we did.
In 1986, Congress passed a law protecting vaccine manufacturers from civil personal injury and wrongful death lawsuits resulting from vaccine injuries. The law is the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act, the Vaccine Act. Should that law be repealed?
Yes. Make pharma liable again.
Really?
Right. Make pharma liable again. Now, I've actually talked about this in terms of what we can do to keep medical cost in check, and one of them is tort reform. That was tort reform run amok, right? Mm-hmm. Going from they were totally liable to now they can do anything they want without any ounce of responsibility for the product they're producing. And they're totally protected from it by the government, and you have no recourse. And look, there have been so many bad vaccines that have harmed so many people, some of them just life-altering, quality of life-altering injuries, and many just death. And yet nobody's doing anything about it other than trying to force more people to do it. I mean, our government, they're running ads paid for by you and me, the taxpayers, to tell people to go out and get your updated COVID shots. Tort reform, I think responsible tort reform ought to happen. But I think, again, making pharma liable again is a very important thing. Totally bad law, unintended consequences. We've seen the consequences, and it's not been good on the health of American and some people, conscientious objectors. I mean, even if it could be good for someone, if they don't want to do it because it doesn't purport with their faith, I'm sorry. You know, if you're an adult, you have the right to not have that treatment and make that decision.
So you're elected to Congress representing the 14th district. What's your number one priority? What legislation would you like to see pass first?
Stop the invasion, secure the border.
Really?
Yep. Number one.
Number one.
Because everything else is not going to matter. If we don't solve that problem, it's a true invasion. The crisis going on because of that in our cities, in our government, in our state, in our safety and security, we're going to be paying a bigger price. I think we're already paying a price for it. It's going to get worse.
We're sending billions of dollars to Ukraine, as well as military equipment, what have you. Where do you stand on that?
They're bad actors on both sides. Those people have been fighting for hundreds of years, centuries. Yeah. I'm not sure why we're funding a war there. I can tell you this, if President Trump were still in office, it wouldn't have happened. No doubt in my mind about that. We have to stop this. We have to stand with our allies like Israel, but we have to be very careful about getting in bed with people who were never our allies.
And I see what's happening to our military, and enlistments are down. If I had a child or a grandchild of draft age, I'd be very concerned right now.
Mm-hmm. Amen to that. It's a telltale sign that something is way out of whack when we can't even get enough of our own people to enlist, because it usually wasn't a problem, right? A sign of what's going on where they've got the wokeness invading the military. You don't think that's affecting enlistment?
You think Lauren Underwood is part of that wokeness in the military?
Absolutely. Absolutely. She stands 100% with what Joe Biden, Kamala Harris does. She's voted for things to help support them in that, especially when they had control of the House, the Senate, and the White House. You know, I know a lot of folks that have served. I know people, younger people that are currently serving and not liking what I'm hearing from them.
All right. James Martyr, the Republican candidate in the 14th Congressional District up against Lauren Underwood. She's got a lot of funding, running TV ads out there and all this kind of thing. But you believe that you can overcome all that.
Yeah, we can. You know, it's really about those key issues. Stop the invasion, secure the border, stop the inflation. All these things people know. I mean, I don't have to tell people what the problems that our government has created in the last 4 years. They know it. They're paying the inflation tax. They're dealing with the insecurity of this invasion that's coming into our country. And they want it to stop. They do want it to stop.
How can 14th District common sense voters help put you in office?
Get out and vote. Vote early or vote on election day, November 5th. But get out there and vote. That's how we win this. And talk to your family and friends that you know haven't voted. Try to find out how they're going to vote. Try to convince them to vote for your conservative, pro-life, pro-family, faith, family, and freedom candidate here in the 14th District, Jim Martyr. Vote smarter for Martyr for Congress.
All right. Thank you, Jim Martyr. God bless you. Let's hope and pray that you pull out a victory on Election Day.
Amen. Amen.
All right. You take care, and thank you, folks, for tuning in. Do support Jim Martyr. And be sure to go to our website, IllinoisFamily.org, to find out about voter resources. God bless.
For more information about Illinois Family Spotlight, visit IFIAction.org. And to email questions and comments, do so at feedback@ifiaction.org.